Well, I want to talk about the gospel for the most part, but I can't pass up those other two readings, just at least briefly. The first reading from the Acts of the Apostles shows the nascent church adapting to its growth, adapting to changing circumstances. And so rather than get defensive, and this is one of my favorite passages in the New Testament, because usually when power, authority, gets criticized, it gets defensive, and it digs in, and it won't give up. But the disciples, they say, oh, you're probably right. We have been ignoring the widows of the Gentiles, and we're sorry about that. Let's see what we can do to fix that. It's just it's such a Christian response. I love that. So, adapting to circumstances, the disciples themselves, this is the leaders, they have a special predilection for the word and for prayer, but they recognize that taking care of the poor is so essential that it may not be their own calling, but it cannot be ignored. And so they establish deacons to take care of the poor, because you just can't be Christian and ignore the poor. So there's some wonderful things going on in that short little passage. And not all of us has the gifts to do it all. And throughout history, the church has sometimes made that mistake. We put too much emphasis on one or two or three people in a huge assembly and just presume that they're going to take care of everything. It takes many gifts because there are many needs. And the needs vary. And I may be good at one thing and I'm terrible at another thing. So I need to be humble enough to say, you know, that isn't my gift. How about you? How about you do that? It's the church in the way that it should be, which is what Luke is often presenting in the Acts of the Apostles. It's his vision for what the church should be. And so we read it during the Easter season because it's such a, we hold it up as a kind of a model of what we should be in the contemporary church. Second reading. St. Peter uses this wonderful image of living stones making up the church. The church, of course, is not this building. The building is necessary. It becomes a vibrant symbol of our faith. It's the place where we meet. It's the gathering place. It's really essential, but it is not the church. The church is you and me. We're living stones that make up the body of Christ. Okay, to the gospel. We were talking last week about this reverse flow of the river. The river of life and love flows out from God, and at some point, specifically at the incarnation of Christ, it reverses the flow and returns to the source. Or, as St. Paul describes it, everything emanates out from God in this huge arc, but it begins to return to God almost like a boomerang, and the turning point is Christ. So, God reaching out to creation after eons and eons of time, at one point in history, takes on creation, joins God's self to creation. And that's what Christ is. Christ is the joining of God and creation in a human being, in a body. And if God is going to take on creation and join God's self to it completely, then that means taking on the sadness, the loss, the failure, along with the joys and the successes and the beauty. Everything, even death. And so this God-created being experiences humanity in its fullness. And a big part of humanity is the separation from itself and God. See, Jesus experiences himself as having come from the Father. Anyone who sees me sees the Father. The Father and I are one. there's that unity, that original unity that was that he was before he took on separate creation. And the separate self, this is, you know, we could call this original sin. It's the division from God. It's the alienation from God. It's the refusal to accept that I am part of God and God is part of me. So I create my own separate self. I'm going to create my own identity. I'm going to decide who I am. I'm not going to let another decide who I am. This is Adam and Eve leaving the garden, separating themselves from God and creating their own identity. But we all do it. It's the effect of original sin. Every one of us has some imaginary self that we dream up, and we spend most of the energy of our entire lives building up that false self. And of course, sometimes we even are convinced intellectually that it's stupid, but we do it anyway. It's just something we can hardly resist. But you know what turns the corner for most of us? Failure and loss. You know, the 12-step programs say you have to hit rock bottom before you can ever resurrect. Death has to be complete. You have to be so desolate that you finally recognize that you can't save yourself, that you need another, that you need a higher power, that you need God. And at that moment, you feel held, sustained, supported by love, or you don't. And you reach that point where you're either gonna find enlightenment, you're gonna find the truth, you're gonna allow yourself to be saved, or you're gonna become negative, you're gonna despair, you're gonna become critical, cynical about life, and it just cascades down from there. But if you, in that darkest moment, accept love, then there is authentic resurrection, and it goes upward from there. Well, you see, in Jesus' life in the Gospels, he takes that typical human pattern. It works uniquely for him, just as it works uniquely for you and me. No two stories are exactly the same. Jesus' story, we hear in the Gospels, we all kind of know it by heart, but let's just repeat it here. He experiences love from Mary and Joseph. He grows up, you know, humanly healthy, psychologically sound. And he discovers within himself power to heal, authority to speak to demons. You know, he becomes a miracle worker. His teaching and his reasoning and everything appeal to a large number of people. By the time he reaches the multitude out there on the mountainside, there are 5,000 or more. You know, he's a rock star in terms of his popularity and his acceptance. But then, eventually, they find his message hard to take. Eat his body and drink his blood. What is he talking about? He's a cannibal. You know, people walk away from him. And at one point, he turns to Peter and he says, "Are you going to leave me too?" And Peter, by that time, because Peter's such a wonderful failure, he falls and allows himself to be picked up. The beauty of Peter is not that he was perfect, far from it, but that he had the humility to accept forgiveness, and he just got stronger after each failure. And so Peter says, "Well, Lord, to whom would we go? You have the words of everlasting life. We have to stay with you. We've already made that choice. We're too far down that road. We can't go back now." And hopefully most of us in this room can say that with Peter. "I've gone too far down this road. I can't turn back now. I know that he has the words of everlasting life." And so Jesus continues to fail. He gets spat upon. He gets crowned with thorns. He gets crucified. I mean, Talk about a failure. Talk about the experience of loss in our human lives. He experiences it to the nth degree, going all the way to the death. But then there's resurrection, because in his darkest hour, Father, into your hands I commend my spirit. He has this ability to trust even in his darkest hour. He feels held by the Father. He feels redeemed, saved by love. And then we hear him today speaking to his disciples, and he says, I'm returning to the Father. And when I get there, I'm going to prepare a place for all of you. There are many dwelling places. There's one for everybody, and I'm going to take care of it, and I'm going to take you with me so that where I am, you also may be. And Thomas says, how do we know the way? We don't even know where you're going. And Jesus says, I am the way. That journey out from God to individuality and the return to God, the regrafting to the vine, the acceptance that I belong to another, that there is no self apart from God, that I come from God, I'm going to God. I am a river that is reversing direction. I'm jumping in the river of Christ that is heading back to the Father, and I'm okay with that. I'm going to stop fighting that, and I'm just going to allow that stream to take me back to love, back to my origins. That's what salvation is. That's what resurrection is. Resurrection is dying to the individual self and rising to the real self that is part of God and in which God takes a part. And the fact that I can't control it myself, the fact that I can't claim it, the fact that I can't make it on my own is okay. In fact, I can fall into love. And that is my resurrection, and that is my life.